May 12th, 2021, meeting of the Education Finance Conference Committee. Let's begin by taking the roll. Ms. Sunderland, if you would please take the roll for the House.
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Chair Richardson.
Present.
Representative Hassan.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor. And that is the roll for the House.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Ms. Donovan? Ms. Donovan, you are muted. It just gets it out of the way early, right?
Apologies. Thank you. Senator Chamberlain was present. Senator Dornick?
Present.
Senator Duckworth? Senator Duckworth, you're muted. Senator Eichhorn?
Present.
Senator Weaker?
Here.
Thank you. That completes the roll for the Senate.
Thank you, Ms. Donovan. Afternoon, Mr. Chair. How are you?
I'm muted. Senator Chamberlain, he's speaking to you, I think.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
How are you today?
Well, I'm ready when you are, sir.
All right. A beautiful sunny day out there.
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry?
We should limit the time here.
Well, you know, hopefully we should use our time here productively.
We will. We will.
Very good. Glad to hear it. Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you very much. Very much for having us today.
Appreciate your being here. All right. Mr. Chair, there's been conversation and some back and forth around issues of student experience in schools. How do we create a learning environment for everybody, I think, is the way that we would think about it on the House side, that's safe and supportive for all of our students. So we wanted to start today with discussion on the multi-tiered systems of support and how that impacts student behavior. And so we've got two testifiers. I'll start with Ms. Tracy Ogren, who's a school psychologist in Robbinsdale. Ms. Ogren, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Tracy Ogren. And thank you, members of the conference committee, for the invitation to speak with you all today. My name is Tracy Ogren. I am a school psychologist at Sonneson Elementary in the Robbinsdale Area School District. I'm here today to talk about the multi-tiered system of supports framework, better known as MTSS, and how this framework is fundamental to the success in Minnesota schools. MTSS is a systemic framework that aligns resources to student needs. Utilizing an MTSS framework, schools are able to provide evidence-based interventions to efficiently and effectively help students reach success. Without this framework, students can fall through the cracks. In 2019, just 69% of Black students graduated in Minnesota, while only 50% of Indigenous students graduated. These are just two examples from a long list of outcomes, and these are outcomes that can be avoided if we have a system that proactively addresses their needs. Without a successful education, these students are locked out of opportunity, resulting in an ethical crisis with long-term consequences. By embracing MTSS at our elementary school, we decreased our behavior referrals from over 900 per year to around 100 per year within a three-year time period. Building suspensions went from 65 in a year to only 8 suspensions last year. Within our framework, we have been able to work on dismantling inequities within our building. We were able to decrease the percentage of discipline referrals given to Black students by 15% over the last 2 years. Our MTS framework has also allowed us to better meet our students' academic needs. Our framework has allowed our first grade teachers to utilize letters training as a support for all students. Then, at a common time in the day, teachers are able to switch students across the grades and provide strategic interventions based on needs. They utilize tutors, a reading specialist, and our EL teacher in order to efficiently meet more students' needs. As a more specific example, I'd like to tell you about a second grade student who has thrived under our MTSS framework. In first grade, she was reading 17 words correct per minute, and the average is 37 words correct per minute, so she was in the high risk range for reading. Her mother was concerned that she may have a learning disability. Using support provided through our MTSS framework, we were able to utilize quality core instruction with strategic interventions to intervene. She ended her first grade year at the 23rd percentile in A reading, which was still considered some risk, but was an improvement. We continued utilizing supports from our MTSS framework this year, and now, towards the end of second grade, she's performing in the 98th percentile on A reading measures. She is not a student with a learning disability, but she would have been a student who would have fallen through the cracks without an MTSS framework. Schools frequently purchase and introduce programs that have the potential for success. However, these programs are plugged into a system that does not support implementation. Without that support, we end up with lackluster results, only to move to the next program a few years later. It is a costly, ineffective cycle. In my district, our success with evidence-based programs like letters can be directly tied to MTSS and its support for effective implementation and integrity. MTSS is not a one-size-fits-all program. It is a framework that allows us as educators to make local decisions in an effective, meaningful way that results in student success. At Sonneson Elementary, we've been able to adapt our MTSS framework to meet the unique needs of our families and our communities. We know that the deficits and disparities we are experiencing in our schools are systemic. We cannot address systemic problems with isolated solutions. If we are serious about serving Minnesota's families and addressing the serious issues that exist throughout Minnesota schools, then we need to look toward evidence-based systemic frameworks like MTSS. Thank you again for inviting me to speak with you all today.
Thank you, Ms. Ogren. Appreciate your testimony here today. Next on the agenda is Tanis Henderson. Ms. Henderson is president of the Minnesota School Counselors Association. Excuse me. Ms. Henderson, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Hello, Chair Chamberlain and members of the Conference Committee. My name is Tanis Henderson. I am the current president of the Minnesota School Counselors Association, and I'm also a school counselor in Deer River Schools. I am here today to speak in favor of language included in House File 1065, the Third Engrossment, Article 6, Section 5, which defines multi-tiered systems of support. Included in your packet is a letter from the Minnesota School Counselors Association in support of this language. While response to intervention focuses on academics and positive behavior interventions and supports and social emotional learning, MTSS encompasses the whole child. It acts as a way of organizing supports within a school so that both the academic side and the social emotional learning side are aligned to serve the student. Multi-tiered systems of support sounds like a complicated term, but really this is common sense. It's an approach to meeting our students' needs. And I think if this pandemic has taught us anything, it's about the importance of relationships. Relationships in the classroom, the school building, and in the community at large. These relationships help educators know what level of supports our students need to be successful. I've worked with students this year who typically are good students who attend school on a regular basis, but with the year that we've had, they've developed some anxiety surrounding going into the classroom after being online or in hybrid models. And so they're having a hard time participating in class. And it might seem like they don't care or they're not engaged, but in reality, they need additional tier two or tier three supports, such as anxiety groups or individual counseling to support them in reducing their anxiety and getting back into class. Educators are looking for guidance from the state on what appropriate multi-tiered systems of support looks like, and this language gives educators the tools that they need. There's broad agreement that removing students from the classroom environment contributes to the achievement gap and equity issues. Meeting the needs of our students in the least restrictive environment possible is critical to eliminating our opportunity gap. Finally, when multi-tiered systems of support are an important resource, our students also need more highly qualified personnel to meet their needs. I urge the conference committee to adopt the House and Governor's position on student support personnel aid, which would add 300 school counselors, nurses, social workers, and psychologists across the state. I also urge you to make meaningful ongoing investments in education funding in order to lower our class sizes for our students. Educators are able to be much more successful in meeting the needs of a class of 18 than 36. And relationships are so important, and it's so much easier with smaller class numbers. I appreciate your time today and your commitment to the education of students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Ms. Henderson, thank you. And Ms. Ogren, again, thank you both for kind of bringing in how you can implement these approaches and best meet the needs of students for their experience, but then you know you tie it also to their academic performance. So it's the better kids are doing, the better they're able to do, seems to be my takeaway at least. Members, questions? Mr. Chair.
Yeah, so I'm trying to understand this. My first thought is, now don't take this the wrong way, you educators. I'm just trying to understand what we're trying to do here. My thought is this would be something that is already part of what educators do every day, you know, with children in the classroom, that each child is different. Most kind of work okay, but then you have some children, for whatever reason, have different challenges. Outside the special ed area, this is not a special ed issue necessarily, I would assume. So I'm trying to, number one, I'm assuming that we're already doing this in the classrooms, that educators already see if there's an issue, they try to address it the best they can in the school. So I'm thinking, don't you already have these resources and you can on it as you already are? The doctor said, Dr. Ogren was saying that they are doing this in their school in Robbinsdale District. So that's number one. Number two is an idea. I looked at the governor's proposal too, and then of course the House's. I don't know, and maybe the chair can answer this. I don't know what the House is doing. There's clearly to me in one section, it's a definition. The governor has this and he's putting money behind it. So two points there is, what is it that we're trying to do with the House? Just define it. And secondly, if there's money behind it, is it to mainly put money to the regional centers of excellence and grants for the school? So first one is just a general comment. And second is, I'm trying to understand what we're doing with the MTSS in the House bill. It just looks like a definition.
So, Mr. Chair, let's take first things first and hand this back to Dr. Ogren or Ms. Henderson to respond to the chair, either or both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I should start. I'm not Dr. I'm Mrs. Ogren. No, so no. Thank you for...
I thought maybe he knew something I didn't.
Well, I assume, I guess.
And that's a good question. Yeah. I will say at Sonneson, the elementary school I'm working at, we have been able to find ways to implement an MTSS framework that is not consistent across all of our buildings, and it is dependent on training and resources and what we have available. So I can speak to what we have done and been able to put together, but that's not consistent across our district, which I can speak to.
Thank you.
Ms. Henderson?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, you're right. We do that as schools, right? Like naturally we kind of fix what's going on. But the difference with MTSS is instead of kind of putting out the fires, we're getting on the front end and saying like, okay, we're going to teach some of these behaviors. We're going to make sure that everyone has this general curriculum and then working our way back to make sure that we don't miss students. Because I think that's the problem when there's not the systems in place. Is that students do fall through. And so by having the developed multi-tiered systems of support, we're better able to make sure that all students' needs are being met, not just the ones that are rising to the surface because of certain behaviors or academic progress. You know, I think like Mrs. Ogren was saying, like schools are definitely in different places. We are in a different place. And I feel like a lot of times, like in our district, like we're having to put out more fires and just kind of go what's in front of us, even though, you know, we are looking at the data and we do need that extra support. And so while we are meeting the needs of our students, most of our students, I would say, like, unfortunately, there's still some gaps and we have some work to do. And that's not an atypical story.
Commissioner, some of this came to us via the governor, mm-hmm. as Chair Chamberlain has indicated. Can you elaborate, provide some insight, some context for us?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Dabney. I think that what we really goes back to is one of the pieces that you had even, I think, alluded to, Chair Chamberlain, was that this really does not, you know, speak specifically to special education. A multi-tiered system of support actually is a framework that helps to very clearly identify students for special education, but does not actually mean that every single student goes. I think Mrs. Ogren talked specifically about a student who may have been identified, who would have been misidentified, and we have overrepresentation of that for our Black students, our Indigenous students, and our students of color. And so what a multi-tiered system of support allows a school district and a school to do is to really identify what we are going to provide for every single student as a base around behavior, academics, and social emotional learning. And then from there, if there is, you know, usually it's about 80% of our students we know are going to be able to meet that need and those expectations that are identified through the common forms of instruction. We also know that there are going to be additional students who need some additional time for a variety of reasons or need some additional support and context, whether that's in learning around behavior, academics, and social emotional points. And so from there, then it gives us the chance to really provide a very specific intervention. It's targeted to that individual student. It usually is done in addition to, not in lieu of. And so it gives us the opportunity to really give students what they need. And then from there, again, there's also some progress monitoring. We are using data to be able to move students from one tier to the next. And while that gets into the weeds, I think it's important to note that in order to be able to do that and to do it well and effectively to ensure that the model is meeting the needs of each and every student and that our staff are able to, that our school psychologists are not spending the bulk of their time testing students that shouldn't be tested, but are actually helping to provide services and helping on that front end and being proactive, like Ms. Anderson said. And so it really is a front loading so that we're not always having to react, but instead having the opportunity to set up a proactive system. The inconsistency comes, I think, in the way that both Ms. Anderson and Ms. Ogren spoke about it is that it is possible that we will have school districts or schools that are able to implement a multi-tiered system of support because they happen to have the funding to be able to do that. Or they have the individual resources, but it becomes a hit and miss. It doesn't mean that every school in the same district has that, or it doesn't mean that every school across the state does that. And I think one of the things that we know is if we want to be proactive, if we want to be equitable in our approach, we also need to ensure that each and every student across the state has an opportunity to have a proactive approach versus consistently being reactive. So that not if you were in one district, you may not have been identified for special education because you have a system and structure that helps to support that, but in another that you might have been. And so I think that's one of the reasons we want to be able to be really build a multi-tiered system of support, to be able to clearly define what that looks like and also ensure that we're able to meet the needs of each and every student in both academics, behavior, and social emotional learning.
Thank you, Commissioner. That was very helpful. Representative Pryor.
Okay, here we go. Made it. thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation this morning. And thank you, our testifiers, for taking the time from your day, because I know that you're doing important work to share with us what your experience is. So we do really appreciate it. And we're glad that you didn't have to come to St. Paul and I'm kind of glad I didn't have to go to St. Paul either. I got a better view out my window here. What I wanted to ask about, and this isn't necessarily I'm calling on you as your expertise, but we talk about this being an evidence-based practice, and which means that it's not just a great idea, it's something that people think, oh yeah, this sounds great, this will work, but there's actually research behind it that demonstrates that when you do are using a framework like this, that we get the results that we're looking for. In other words, that the investment is there and that it pays off. So perhaps, you know, you can, and I also really appreciate the example of a particular student and how that student has to illustrate what the value of the program is. But can you speak a little bit kind of just to the general research that you have either in your school or that you know of that beforehand that would go into it, that your school that knew that this was the direction to go and that would pay off? And I also, you know, appreciate if the commissioner too can talk about what we mean by evidence-based for this kind of program.
Ms. Ogren, Ms. Henderson, who's up first?
I can start.
Ms. Ogren.
That's a good question. It started to have me thinking, what was it when we started to implement? And the second grade student that I gave the example, going along with what others had said, had she not been in our school, she would not have gotten, if she would have been in another school that didn't have the same setup that we did, she would not have had the same results, which speaks again to that inconsistency. As a building, I would say about 10 years ago, we started to look more into creating a better MTSS framework within our building. As far as evidence-based, I will maybe let the commissioners talk a little bit more about broad research. In our building, some of the biggest pieces of evidence, as I shared, the decrease in behavior referrals would not have happened without our solid MTSS systems. Currently, our elementary school has the lowest number of suspensions in our entire district. And that's huge. And it speaks to that evidence of what we are doing is working. And we still have so much more work to do. And not every building in our district has the same supports that we do and the same setup. We're trying to get there, and we're looking for support from legislature to help us be able to get there and help us to be able to reproduce that in more places.
Ms. Henderson, anything to add?
You know, we're definitely at a different place, I would say, with MTSS, but, you know, I think the draw is about the evidence base, that it has been tried, it does work, and if you're following the process and you have those supports, we know that we're going to do what's best for all of our students, and I think the great thing is also that it really is like locally based, right? Like some of the practices that you use are really based on what works in your school and in your school culture. But you know, under that tier of evidence based and like what best practice is.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you've been patient. Thank you.
Thank you. For the insight again in the testimony. Mr. Chair, so the definition in the House side, that's, we're not mandating this for the schools, right? This is just something that would be available to the schools through the RCEs and MDE?
So, Mr. Chair, let me handle the finance dimension and defer to Chair Richardson on the policy part. Okay. But what we are providing funding for the implementation of MTSS, $5 million each year, so a total of proposed $10 million spending in the next biennium.
Okay, so yeah, I thought I saw it in your, okay, thank you.
Okay, and Chair Richardson, do you have more to add in here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that I have more to add, but just to lift up some of the testimony that was already offered in terms of the pieces around the evidence-based strategy processes, and also the fact that the approach is a universal one as well to ensure that no students are being left behind. I will take this opportunity, since I was called on, to thank both of the testifiers as well for coming to present information today.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Chair Chamberlain, are we getting closer to answers for you?
Yeah, just one more follow-up, then we can move on.
Certainly.
But this isn't a mandate. It just says the money will go there, Mr. Chair, and be available to support and assist schools if they desire to implement different pieces, correct? I mean, you can mandate some, so pay for it, but it's still a mandate, right?
Well, my understanding is we are not mandating this, but providing funding to move schools along the way.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. That helps. Just one last comment, then you'll probably have a closing thought after this. Well, I was provided a document of the 2016 survey that was conducted, and I'm wondering about the time frame for implementation. In their survey and what they concluded in this, doing all these things, maybe it was just for the ELA, for the English language arts piece of it, but changing this stuff along with the other things might take a while to implement. Maybe it doesn't, but their survey here that was conducted said, quote here, now maybe it's a typo, results show, or you can clarify, results show that the current rate of growth, both the 2010 ELA standards and MTSS, can be projected to be fully implemented by all schools in 2064. So maybe it was just for that section that particular time. Maybe it's advanced since then, but so if you can clarify that. So I'm just wondering again, you've answered a lot of questions. I thank you for that. And I'll leave it at that, just that kind of that time frame and another layer of something here that I think schools are doing. But thank you for the time, and thank you to testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2064, it's good to have a long time horizon, but that does seem perhaps to be one of those at the current pace things. But Commissioner, do you know the document, and can you help us better understand that? Because I'm lost.
Sure. I'm not exactly sure about the survey that you're referring to, Chair Chamberlain, but I think a couple of pieces. One, going back to the evidence and the research, we know that the research done by the American Institute for Research, AIR, as well as the University of Minnesota, Hanover Research, the National Center for Special Education Research has strong evidence and corollary parameters between what has happened for students and the implementation of a multi-tiered system of support. Things that you might know more about, I think, your context, like for types of interventions include like the BAR Center. Letters is another example, implementation of PBIS, as well as a pyramid model for early childhood. And part of the reason why I would venture to guess that you're looking at 2064 is because it does take funding to be able to fully implement across the state. And so if we have not been able to provide funding to school districts, both in human capacity as well as in monetary resources, then it's going to take us a long time to get there. And so if we were able to have the funding, if we had the school psychologists and the social workers and the counselors and the nurses in our buildings, it is a much easier prospect, because that also helps to advance a multi-tiered system of support in providing that. And so I think that they go tandem. One, you do need to have the funding to be able to do that, and you need to be able to create the system and the structure. And so I think that's part of the reason 2064 is out there, is because it takes time if you don't have the people and you don't have the money.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. It's reinforces a number of the points that have been made well. Ms. Henderson, you have your hand up.
I was just going to offer, in relation to the definition, I've been fortunate to be on the task force helping develop that definition. And part of it is about like if someone asked, like, what does MTSS look like in Minnesota, that's that standing foundation so that, like, all schools have that same vision to make sure that all of our students are getting that excellence. And so I think, like, when I know Chair Chamberlain had asked about, like, the definition piece, and I think that's really the center point of that, is having that foundational understanding and knowledge and common language across Minnesota regarding what we're talking about with MTSS.
Mr. Chair, what I think you're seeing from the House is a real desire to focus education maybe a little bit more, if I can be critical of my own profession, on evidence-based practices, so that there's a deeper knowledge base under the approaches we take to students, regardless of whether it's behavioral things, academic things, that we're working on what the evidence has shown us is effective. Also assuring that students, regardless of where they live, have access to the same supports and the same academics. I raised with you the other day the apparent paucity of access to computer science principles, advanced placement classes in the northern part of the state, and our belief that kids in the north should have the same access to those 21st century skills as kids in the metro do. So you'll see some themes, I think, building out across proposals for us, and the support for MTSS is another example of that. Now, Mr. Chair, you've still got your hand up, and I'm assuming that, that's what I thought. All right. Ms. Ogren, Ms. Henderson, thank you both again for taking time out of your days today to share your perspectives with us. Very helpful, very valuable. Be well.
Thank you for the opportunity. Take care.
Next, we want to shift to religious freedom in schools. I think this committee has, not surprisingly, on a bipartisan basis, already established this through provision that was accepted earlier this week, the deep American value of religious freedom and respect for religious diversity. Another expression of that in the House bill is the provision related to traditional tobacco for Native American students and their ability to possess that in schools. And so I want to call upon a testifier who appeared before the House earlier this year, Nicole McMahon, to be able to speak to that. Ms. McMahon, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you all. My name is Nicole McMahon. I'm an enrolled member of Red Lake Nation. I represent District 197 as an American Indian parent as well. I work for the Minnesota Humanities Center, and I'm also very involved in the district in a number of committees, including the Equity Advisory Committee. I'm here today to talk about the importance of tobacco and the policy in the schools. Tobacco is a very religious and spiritual part of American Indian culture. For those that don't know, a traditional medicine bag is usually just a small pouch worn by some American Indian people, but it's considered very sacred and special. Its contents are usually private. They often symbolize tribal identity, well-being, you know, anything of a personal nature. They hold numerous items such as sage, sweetgrass, tobacco, could be beads or an arrowhead. It's really anything of spiritual value to the person who's wearing it. And yes, tobacco is a common item found in a medicine bag, but because of its traditional belief in healing and the important role it plays. I wanted to clarify, though, the type of tobacco that's found in medicine bags is usually such a small amount that it would be very hard to use it if there was intent to smoke it or chew it. It's not your mainstream tobacco that contains nicotine and other chemicals. It's typically traditional raw tobacco in its purest form. So, you know, why is changing the language so important? Students have the freedom of religious beliefs, and prohibiting a student from wearing a medicine bag at school or even searching its contents violates that freedom. This bill creates an exception to the current policy language, and it allows American Indian students carry a medicine pouch that may or may not contain loose tobacco, intended to be used in a traditional way, again, not for chewing or smoking. And not changing the language in this policy would infringe on the students' religious freedoms. This is also a great opportunity, as we've heard, you know, earlier about being more inclusive and understanding. This is another step closer to creating a more inclusive and understanding society and culture in our public school system. I'll open it up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McMahon. Questions from members for Ms. McMahon?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain, is that a hand up?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right, thank you.
So I don't have any problem with the concept of this, not at all. It could be workable, I think, with perhaps a change or two, some further discussion with the House about the language. But I'm wondering, Ms. McMahon and Mr. Chair, are there, again, I don't have any conceptual problems, but are there constitutional, broader constitutional issues here about recognition of a particular religion and spiritual process, so as opposed to, you know, allowing others, you know, whether it's Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, Christian, Jews, do we cross some sort of constitutional line about treatment of these different things? Do we open a door to a whole list of exceptions for different things? So I like the concept, and I think it could be workable if we discuss a little bit more. We can discuss it offline too, Mr. Chair, but I just throw that out there for thought and consideration. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McMahon, I don't know if you're a constitutional law expert. We do have some nonpartisan staff we can throw that to, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to respond.
I am not an expert by any means. And I hear the point, but it's, I'll let someone else respond, and then I can certainly add on to that.
Chair Richardson, I see that you came off mute. Did you want to respond? You've done work around this issue for several years now, I know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am not a constitutional law expert either, but a couple of things that I did just want to lift up, and also to thank Ms. McMahon for being willing to come and testify again today. When we discussed this in ed policy, we had conversations around how this is similar to a Christian student having a crucifix, for example. That's something that wouldn't be that wouldn't have any impact. And I think in terms of just looking at some of the current law that is on the books right now related to traditional tobacco. Last year, there was bipartisan support for Tobacco 21, and there's actually carve-out exceptions related to traditional tobacco for individuals under 21 to be able to possess that as part of cultural and spiritual recognition as well. So it's an issue that we have dealt with before as a legislature, and there's precedent for that.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Ms. Pera, do you have anything to add to this conversation?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that because American Indian tribes have a special legal status derived from their status as sovereign nations under the U.S. Constitution and federal law, that would factor into any kind of analysis, constitutional, about whether, treating American Indian students differently for the purposes of this statute.
Thank you. Representative Krisha, I see you have your hand up.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just with a question, and I don't know who can answer this. Are we including this, which, no reason not to support it, but are we including this because we need to solve something? Is there instances where this is not being allowed? Or are we passing this just to make sure we're making a statement about this? As we alluded to with crosses and so forth, I don't think those are prohibited. I don't know. Are there instances where this tobacco is prohibited? So I'm just asking, are we solving a problem or are we just passing a policy to highlight an issue?
Thank you, Representative Krisha. Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Krisha, for the question. Yes, we are addressing issues that are happening right now where students are not being allowed to possess traditional tobacco within schools. So this is not about making a statement. It's actually about being responsive to not only parents, to teachers, and being responsive to administrators as well, who want to ensure that this can respect people's religious freedom.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Commissioner, you popped back on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Chair Dabney, I think that one of the pieces, Keisha, is that we also know that based on what Chair Richardson talked about, is that we do have school districts that struggle with, when they have a policy around tobacco, the feeling is that it must be a consistent piece. And if you have the opportunity to have a delineation of what that looks like for our students who would like to be able to wear tobacco during graduation ceremonies, right, or be able to have them on their body or person throughout the day, is a place where we would need to have that clarity, because in a lot of instances, school policies do not allow for tobacco to be on school premises. And so this is it is helping to solve a problem and that our school leaders are facing pretty consistently.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Mr. Chair, I'd just suggest that there's probably still in a lot of school districts across the state where lunch on Fridays during Lent is fish sticks, which really is acknowledging the traditions of one faith during that time period. So they may not be, I recognize, exactly equivalent, but to your concern about acknowledging one's faith, I think there's some practices out there currently that do that implicitly, if it's not a school policy to provide fish on Fridays during Lent. Ms. McMahon, thank you very much for joining us today. I know this is a repeat before the legislature for you, so we appreciate your persistence on this issue. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, thank you very much. Now, Mr. Chair, we had a good conversation yesterday about a proposal of yours on academic standards and their implementation. I think we even had an agreement on a change in the title of the provision. This would be Senate Article 2, Section 34, that delays the implementation of the arts and FIED standards for 2 years. It was your proposal until 2023. We asked for the title change to clarify that this is about implementation of those standards. We had a little hesitancy around the 2023 date, but after thinking about it and sleeping on it, we see the value of letting districts know that they can relax on these two standards areas for 2 years. So I'm wondering if we're at a point today where we can accept that.
Yeah, I think so. If I read this, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, if I read this correctly, that you sent over. I know we'll take up some of these others that you sent over today. We'll take those up tomorrow. But as far as this one, we did discuss it, as you said. And so that title change, and the only other change then would be to take it to 2023. If that's it, then I'm okay with that.
All right. So Chair Chamberlain moves. Let me make sure I get this right, because if I don't, people will catch it. Senate Section 2, excuse me, Article 2, Section 34, with the incorporating the new title, Revised Academic Standards Implementation Suspension, to nonpartisan staff. Am I correct on the motion? I'm Ms. Para.
Mr. Chair, members. I think the language that is in the Senate proposal is not exactly what is in the Senate bill.
Okay. All right. So how do we best, we've got a document, the House offer from today, that has the language that I understand we've all agreed to. How do we best reference that language for incorporation in our final product, Ms. Pera, in a motion?
Mr. Chair, we could do it orally. We can simply read that and then have that be read into the record as the right language. And you know, I know House and Senate partisan and nonpartisan staff will be tracking it.
All right. Then Chair Chamberlain moves, quote, title Revised Academic Standards Implementation Suspension. Notwithstanding Minnesota statutes, section 120B.021, the Commissioner of Education must suspend until June 1, 2023, any implementation of revised academic standards not already implemented as of January 1, 2021, under Minnesota statutes, section 120B.021. This suspension does not prevent the commissioner from continuing with current rulemaking activities or developing future statewide assessments. Effective date, this section is effective the day following final enactment.
I'm in agreement.
Okay. Phew. Any discussion for the Chamberlain motion? Seeing none, I'll pick up a Senate tradition. I'll ask everyone to turn on their cameras, please. With that, on the Chamberlain motion as read, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Chair Chamberlain.
Thank you.
We have in the House offer four other provisions we just like to talk through a little bit. We appreciate your balanced reading change. And I don't know if Chair Richardson wants to speak to both elements of offer one, the balanced reading change and the traditional tobacco.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I'll be repeating you, but I'm happy to do it. So we would be happy to take the balanced reading change in exchange for the traditional tobacco, which is the conversation that we just had.
I will say we're liking a number of your Senate provisions, quite a number these days, Mr. Chair.
Gee, thanks. Working out swell so far.
Yeah. All right.
So, like I said, I don't have a problem with the concept of the tobacco thing. And Chair Richardson made a good point about a student with a crucifix. They're probably very similar. There is some language in there I'd like to chat about with staff a little bit more, but again, I don't necessarily disagree with the concept, and Chair Richardson made a good point, but I'd like to talk to staff about that a little bit more. That's okay with you, so hold on that and maybe talk about that and get it done tomorrow.
Okay, just fine. And then when we move on to House Offer 2, I think this is a mix of some elements of the House and the Senate. The concurrent enrollment teacher partnership has been an important part of responding to the Higher Learning Commission. Yes, the Higher Learning Commission, and making sure that we are able to offer rigorous coursework, specifically dual enrollment opportunities to students. And so the concurrent enrollment teacher partnership that is a similar between the two bodies, House Article 3, Section 54, Senate Article 3, Section 17. We are interested in your Rural and Career Technical Education Consortium grants. We are understanding at this point, Senator, that we're not discussing any fiscal policy or any fiscal elements, that we're discussing the policy language, but not the funding, that would be premature. Additionally, Chair Richardson, I asked you to speak on the ban on corporal punishment that's coming again from the House bill. We've touched on this already, House Article 4, Section 4, and then also the to pick up today's theme, the evidence-based mental health education that's in House Article 6, Section 1. Chair Richardson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the ban on corporal punishment would just be bringing charter schools in line with public schools in terms of ensuring that they have that ban on corporal punishment. I'm not sure if members saw the recent news story of a school that was using corporal punishment on a young student, but it's just one of those things that wasn't aligned at the very beginning, and it's something that public schools don't have the ability to engage in right now, and so just bringing charter schools in line with that. House Article 6, Section 1 is the evidence-based mental health education piece, and that's just ensuring that I think we're all in agreement about mental health being a priority for all members. And we also understand that pre-COVID, there were high needs. During COVID, those needs have greatly intensified as well. And this is really around ensuring that when schools are engaging in training, that they're using evidence-based mental health education to avoid the concept known as contagion as it relates to suicide prevention training, because if we are not using evidence-based processes for that, it can actually result in a contagion that could lead to self-harm. So ensuring that we're using evidence-based systems to support our students' mental health.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. Chair Chamberlain, thoughts?
Yeah, thank you. Again, I need some time to talk this last one over a little bit with folks, and we can bring it up tomorrow if that's all right. Certainly we don't have the problem with the ban on corporal punishment. We talked about that previously. So, and of course, the other two are right, but I need to look at this other one a little bit more, Mr. Chair and Chair Richardson, now that fully breaks out. So if we can have until tomorrow, but I don't necessarily, agree with the concept. We certainly need, mental health is certainly an issue we're talking about. It's just how we go about that. So we okay, we can hold on that, but I just need to think about that a little bit more in the last one.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then House Offer 3, another Senate proposal, your revenue redirection, I think gives school districts a little bit more flexibility for another year. It's Senate Article 6, Section 4, we're accepting of that, but wanting to continue the conversation around distance and hybrid learning using House Article 2, Section 66, so that we can support schools and give schools some guidance on distance learning. Was just listening to a national radio program with a fair amount of excitement and confidence around students coming back in person next fall, but recognizing that we may still have families who choose to engage in distance learning. For me, I know, and I certainly welcome other conferees commenting, but for me, it's a matter of, okay, we just had this experience. Let's make sure that we all collectively sit down and figure out what worked about that and what didn't work about that before we get too much further down the road. We've got a chance to figure out what works in distance learning and what didn't work in distance learning, and we should do that. And so anyone else want to reference, make any comment on to that? Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we discussed it and certainly understand the need for some best practices. But yeah. Say, just got this, of course, so it's It's a lot of language in there, a lot of changes. So, again, we need to look at that overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it. All right?
All right. Just fine. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, House Offer 5, which takes your proposal from yesterday regarding dismissal of students in kindergarten in grade 3. We thought it supported it to be clearer by providing some definitions. We all want this implemented appropriately and consistently. And the best way we thought to achieve that was to provide folks with the definitions that they needed to be able to do that. Chair Richardson has worked on this, so I'll hand it over to her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you really summed it up in terms of identifying the definitions. And I think the ultimate goal is to ensure that there are definitions to have discipline be consistent and not have such a wide range within the discretion. Because with what we're seeing now in terms of the data and what we heard from the Department of Human Rights, you can have students that are engaging in similar behavior, but the outcomes are very different based upon who the students are. And so when we see the Indigenous students with less than 2% of the school student population being 10 times more likely to be suspended, Black students being 8 times more likely to be suspended, and students with disabilities twice as likely to be suspended, we see that behaviors are not being responded to in the same way, depending upon who the student is. And so this is really to try to get some more alignment to have more consistency within those attempts to hold students accountable.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Richardson. I get what you're saying. I truly do. And, we had language, I think our language kind of democratized the process where you get the community involved with the school board and administrators to look at what's going on in their particular schools and district to address any unequal application of discipline. And I think that's a much better approach. To be honest, I mean, this language, I'm familiar with the CRIM code. This language is a bit heavy. I mean, that's, K-3, I think we're also indicating, I understand what you're getting at, because you could look at a kid and they could have similar behavior and conduct, but for some reason, another child is more frequently disciplined than others. But I think we address that by getting the community involved and requiring the community to be involved in the process. This language here is a bit, I think, too heavy, too much, a little bit too cumbersome. I mean, the child would have to, I understand substantial bodily harm and great bodily harm. And one is temporary, one is a broken leg or something. So I think those standards are a tad bit high. So right now I would not accept that. Currently written, so we'll have to work on that some more, but I appreciate the counteroffer. We'll keep working on it is my position on that. Thank you, Chair Richardson and Chair Dabney.
With that, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and I just want to, add a further comment, if I may, that the language is pretty serious and pretty heavy, as I think Chair Chamberlain pointed out, pretty serious stuff. But then, as we've tried to introduce these discipline practices and the impact that they have on children is equally significant. And that's what we've seen happening in our school, where we start basically losing a child, and we've heard the testimony. Their experience in kindergarten, their experience in first grade, their experience in second grade and third grade, at these very, very young ages, how a certain behavior was handled and how it just keeps magnifying and multiplying in terms of severity until, you know, there's a child that by the time they get to be, you know, full size is, you know, is having an extraordinarily difficult time in class. And so we know that we really do need to pay attention and come up with something that is consistent across our state and really reflects our attention to this problem. So, you know, I do hope that we can, you know, really look at this and come to some agreement, because we know we have a problem and we can't abdicate responsibility. We have to, you know, take on what I, you know, and this is my perspective, I realize, and the House perspective is that we do feel that pulling out these kinds of clear definitions is important to solving the problem that we have in the state right now. So appreciate the discussion and the fact that we can do this in an open and public way and talk about and really, you know, try to pinpoint what we're thinking and why we come to the conclusions that we have. And I think it's a valuable discussion. So thank you also, Chair Richardson, for all the work that you're doing on this. And you educate me all the time. So I do appreciate what you're being part of this discussion.
Any other comments or questions from members? Seeing none, Mr. Chair, we've reached the end of the agenda for today.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So tomorrow, I sent you a text. We don't have any testimony. We'll look at these other three, take those up and discuss them a little bit more, see if we can adopt them. And then we sent you another sheet as well to take a look overnight and discuss three additional issues. All right?
All right.
Tomorrow.
With that, anything else, Mr. Chair? I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, thank you. Commissioner, thank you for joining us today and providing us with some additional depth and perspective. With that, members, we are adjourned. Enjoy the rest of the day. We'll see you tomorrow.